You're listening to Second Stories, created and produced by Second Story, with me, Abigail Brocker, as your host. Second Story is a nonprofit based in Northern Virginia, working to provide safe havens and opportunities to grow and thrive to youth in crisis and their families. We help at-risk and homeless youth step away from their first story, one often marked by abuse, hardship, and crisis, and write their own second story, full of hope and promise. Second Stories is the home for more stories like these from people in our community.
You can't fix what's hidden. I learned about you guys and thought, if I tell my story, that maybe it could help other people.
Amanda grew up in a family that looked just about perfect. They had a house, two kids, a loving mom, and a dad who took his daughters fishing. That's what it looked like on the outside, that is. Behind closed doors, there was fighting, deep financial stress. Amanda's dad even had a closet drug problem. And Amanda was given strict instructions: don't talk about it. As an adult, she's doing precisely the opposite. She's getting vulnerable and honest, revealing truths that were kept even from her cousins and her grandparents when she was a kid. She's making sure her own children understand mental illness, and she is drawing her own story from the shadows. Meanwhile, she's healing and helping us do what we care about most, sharing stories that make everyone else feel like they're not so alone, like they can write their own second story too. Amanda, thanks so much for doing this. It's so funny because you're the very first person I talked to, and I think asked to do the podcast, and you're the last one we're talking to. So it's a very good bookend. It's exciting. And I know it's because you're busy, not for any other reason. But so thank you for making the time to do this.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. I want to start off by asking about your family and about growing up. I know that you've mentioned before sort of that the way that your family looked on the inside is very different than the way your family looked on the outside. And I think that's something that a lot of people probably listening can register with for one reason or another. Can you go into that a little bit?
Sure. So I grew up in New England and had, you know, mom, dad, sister, cat, dog, you know, typical, I think, American family. And just to try to get at, I think, what you're asking, on the outside, you know, we went to school, I got straight A's, we were, you know, did a lot of things together as a family. I remember definitely, you know, going fishing with my dad and being in Girl Scouts and, you know, doing all the things that seem like normal kids do. But then on the inside, and this probably got worse as I got older, but my dad drank a lot. And so we had a lot of experiences at home that were, you know, a lot of fighting. He would disappear for periods of time. It definitely was not what I would call it. It probably actually is pretty normal for a lot of people, I think. But it was definitely not as perfect on the inside of the house as it maybe seemed on the outside, where, you know, we were had our birthday parties and all of our normal life. And but at home, we struggled financially and my parents' marriage wasn't stable.
Do you think you had an awareness of that when you were really young, or how old were you when you realized things weren't as great as they felt?
I think probably I realized that things were hard before maybe fifth grade occasionally, but it seemed like they happened in bouts where my parents would fight for a little while, or my dad would go on a little bender, and right. It would be, you know, mostly though at that time it was he was sleeping all day and we didn't know why, or he wasn't going to work and we didn't know why, or it wasn't, you know, computing. And then when I was in third grade, my parents bought a house. And so that seemed like, okay, well, now everything is going to be normal and we live in a beautiful neighborhood and we got a dog. And then probably by fifth grade, maybe it was also the financial strain of buying a house. But by fifth grade, it definitely, my parents fought all the time. And my dad was gone a lot of the time and we didn't do things like fishing with dad anymore. And my dog wasn't well taken care of. And so it was a strain by then and started to get stressful. And I remember in particular having an assignment. Like I said, I had always gotten really good grades and I had an assignment from a teacher. And I remember still very viscerally going to the bus because I hadn't done it. And that was not like me.
Do you think the reason that you didn't do well on the project was because you needed help and there wasn't time and attention at home to help you? Or was it because you were so distracted by what was going on at home that you felt like you couldn't focus on your schoolwork?
I was more of a latchkey kid. So I would come home, I would eat a snack, do my homework, go play with friends. And then I don't remember doing homework with my family at night. So, but I do think it was being distracted and having pressures that were, not wanting to be home, not wanting to, so I would get home, drop my bags and run to someone else's house. And maybe not focus on what I needed to do like I normally had.
And as a kid, you can't really articulate that necessarily.
I'm not even sure I really understood it at the time that it was affecting, because it was probably the first time it had really affected certainly my grades, but my ability to do something.
So do you think it's because you didn't really understand what was going on or understand your feelings that you didn't feel like you could talk to your teachers about it?
I felt like, and was probably told, we don't talk about this outside of the house. So, don't tell anybody what's going on. This is embarrassing. I grew up never feeling that way. So I don't hide anything because I feel like you can't deal with things well if they're all hidden. And I feel like I bottled things up for a long time. And because I was told not to, nobody needs to know about this. And so, I don't remember ever talking about it. And so I don't think in that situation, wanting to fit in, that I would go in and share what was going on.
So I can't imagine that balancing act worked very well for your parents for very long. How did that go as you grew older?
Mostly looking back, I remember that they avoided each other. So we went and stayed or spent lots of time with my mom's friends, or she busied herself with other things like shopping or church or work. And for the most part, he was gone a lot. After several days, I would think, where's dad? But if, a couple days, if I didn't see him, I wouldn't really have thought much of it. But to answer your question, by middle school, the fighting was really nonstop and loud and scary.
What did that look like?
It looked like my sister and I running upstairs and hiding, being afraid for my mom. I definitely remember trying to put music on loud and cover my ears and hide from, them screaming at each other. Usually about money is what I think we would hear and the stress of that. But there was probably a lot of other conversations. Yeah. Where have you been? What are, that I don't remember.
So money was an issue. Do you feel like growing up you didn't have enough?
For sure. Yes. And I think a lot of that was my mom trying to help us seem normal. So I don't remember. We always had food. That was not an issue. But I do remember, when you want to fit in and you want to wear certain clothes and everyone else is shopping at the Gap. And, I remember my mom driving us a long distance to go to outlets back then because they weren't everywhere. So we would drive, 4 hours to go up to outlets so we could afford that. Those clothes. And I definitely remember going on field trips and other kids spending money and, not really having that, or understanding that if my mom was giving me money for the field trip, that it was very stressful for her.
And as an adult, I can see, and I know you can too now, see like, well, if dad was drinking a lot and there was an issue with money in the home, I'm sure that caused conflict with your parents too.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, so you talk a lot about your mom helping you out a lot. But where was your dad in all of this? I mean, he was gone a lot, but did you feel like he cared about you guys in the midst of your confusion and, you know, stuff at home?
Until maybe, probably, I would say until we moved from, you know, one house, from living in an apartment to a house. Mm-hmm. Yes. But by fifth grade, no. I don't remember. I remember putting on a face to go to whatever family event there was.
Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't remember him, I guess, you know, quote unquote, caring.
Right.
Or paying much attention to us.
Right. And you said that I remember you saying that things sort of took a turn in middle school.
Yes. So I think that the fighting between my parents really escalated, and my dad was doing drugs, not just drinking anymore. And that was coming into the house, which I did not know, but my mom found out. And so
what did that mean? It came into the house. Like, he was doing drugs in the house.
Yes. He had, I remember, or I've been told after the fact, you know, telling my mom, oh, dad's friend, you know, Chris was over or whoever, and her getting very upset about it. And now I understand that that was someone he was doing drugs with. And, then I think things really kind of hit the fan when my mom found a lot of drugs in the house. And so, you know, I don't know exactly what that means, but I think he was not just doing drugs. He may have been dealing drugs. I never saw that. I didn't, you know, that was definitely, I was protected from that. But at that point, their relationship turned violent. And so I think she confronted him about it, and he pushed her, and she hit her head and had to get stitches. And it was very scary time for us. You know, I definitely remember snatches of that evening. And we fortunately had a police officer who lived across the street. So that was the first time I remember somebody outside our house knowing that things were not.
Oh my goodness. There's a lot going on before someone outside the house realized what was going on.
Yes.
Wow. So what did the police officer, I mean, what happened then when people started finding out?
She went away in an ambulance, and I'm pretty sure he went to jail, or at least to be held somewhere and talked to. My mom, to my knowledge, did not share with the neighbors that they should go look in the house for anything. And so she definitely still tried to cut that part out. And my understanding is to protect us. She didn't, she had actually worked as a legal secretary in a criminal law firm. And so she knew, unfortunately, that the system is not always, you know, it's not every situation is black and white, and the system does not always protect everybody. So, you know, she did not want us to be taken away from her because somebody decided that she knew about things, you know, where when she found out about things, she tried to protect us from that. But I think she was afraid that she would lose us and she would lose everything because of what he was doing. And I can understand that. So he did not move back in with us after that. And
he stayed away.
Yeah. Well, maybe not stayed away of his own volition, but she got divorce proceedings in place. Okay. And
did you see him again?
Yes.
Okay. Do you see him now?
Now, no, but until I was in my late 30s, I did.
Wow.
On and off at different ways and different times throughout my life. I mean, he threatened my mom a lot. Mm-hmm. And so threatened to try to take us away and try to get custody. I remember that conversation, that he was going to try to get custody of us, and we were just dumbfounded because how could someone who's such not a contributing member of society or a good person,
yeah,
be allowed to take their kids. But my mom was afraid that he would. So part of their divorce papers was that we would see him on the weekends. And so I remember being forced to go and spend time with him. I remember being my mom saying, don't tell your little sister all the details of what you know, because she's 3 years younger than me. So she didn't ever really know. I would fight with him a lot. And that, I think, was scary because I didn't want to see him. And so I remember having yelling matches where he would call me names and I would say, I don't understand how anybody thinks this stuff didn't happen. I saw it happen. And I don't know why I have to see you. And so by the time I was 18, I mean, I didn't really have to see him. I went to college. And the weirdest thing for me is probably that he was at all the big events. Again, I feel like some of it was trying to keep the peace and save face. But, yeah, you know, we were so close to his family. So he was at my high school graduation and he was at my college graduation. And, you know, the last big thing he was at was my wedding. And that for me was the weirdest thing in the world, because I thought, you know, here I am. I've danced with him because my husband wanted to dance with his mom. And I didn't want it to feel weird for everybody else. So, or my grandma, you know, not to see that. And it felt like the right thing to do. And I just remember dancing with him thinking, you shouldn't even be here. I don't know why I said yes to this. Now I don't see him because he's still the same person. There were periods of time where he was not maybe drinking or doing drugs or being violent, but it's come up in over time. And then a few years ago, he had gone after my grandmother. My whole family was like, you have to do something about this. I said, are you kidding me? What am I supposed to do about this? It's been going on my whole life. And, you know, you all maybe haven't known about it, but let me be clear.
Yeah. Do you feel like in some senses that was helpful for you to be able to say, this has been in my life for this long, and now you guys understand who this person really is? Did it feel almost like it was eye-opening for the whole family, or did they already know?
I feel like it was eye-opening for them. I mean, some of my cousins said, we never knew why your parents got divorced.
Wow. Okay. So this was really hush-hush.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And so it was a very complex situation where I, you know, wanting to protect my family and do something about it, I looked into, you know, restraining orders and for my grandmother, how do we protect her? And I had some conversations with her where she basically said, look, he had what I learned is that he probably had mental illness his whole life. So she talked about him having issues as a child that back in the 50s, there was no way to deal with them. So she had said, you know, they would have taken him away or done something to him to try to make him right. So then I learned, oh, he's been self-medicating probably his whole life. So what was a relief for me was at that time, I did a lot to try to help him, just give him resources and say, look, I understand what you've probably been going through or I'm trying to, and here are some things that could help you. And he didn't do those things and rejected them. But I was able to say, I've really done all that I can for you. And I don't want you in my life anymore because it's too painful. And you're scary. So, you know, I'm not going to open up my home with my kids for you to come be a part of this. And I don't really know what else to do for you, but this is the end of the road for us.
Yeah. Wow. After all of this went down and your parents got divorced, and you're still seeing your dad, but your parents are separated. I imagine that was really difficult, especially if you were told it had to be kept a secret. There's so much going on that you can't acknowledge. How did you deal with all of that?
Actually, I think that was a situation where struggling can make you a stronger person. Yeah. So I had always done well in school and thought I would go to college.
Yeah.
At that time, I thought, I am getting out of here. And I am not going to ever be in a situation like this if I can help it. And so I really focused on, I'm going to get good grades. And, you know, my family was struggling a lot financially. So in order for me to still try to fit in school, I got a job. I remember getting a waiver, I think probably at 14, so I could work. And, you know, I babysat before that, and then I got a job and I worked all the time. So looking back, I did not, you know, every day after school, I got on the bus and I went to work, and I did not do sports or a lot of, you know, after school clubs or anything like that. I just was going to, and fortunately that wasn't a requirement so much for college, I guess. Now it is. So, you know, I just tried to work my butt off,
to distract yourself.
Good grades. And yeah, yes, definitely. That too. But also when my mom tells a story about how when she was getting a divorce, she was so horrified that this was happening and that this is how things had turned out. And she remembers telling us and us saying, oh my God, we're so relieved. It feels like you can breathe in here. That it was so stressful to live with the situation, that when at least it was marginalized to only part of the time, it felt better because it had been hard all the time. We didn't want to be in the house. And then at least we could go home and it felt like we could relax. And so she was, I know, relieved because she said, you know, we had stayed together because we thought that's what you did for your family, that, you know, you tried to hold things together for your kids. And now I see maybe that wasn't.
Not true.
Yeah, that wasn't as helpful as she had thought. Yeah.
Okay, so you did go to college. Did that bring you even more relief?
Yes, getting away, yeah, for sure. It's funny, my family, not my mom, not her side of the family, but my dad's side of the family, kept saying, why do you need to go away to school? There are great schools, you know, right here in town. I was the first person in my family to go to college, except for my grandmother on my mom's side. So my mom didn't finish college, and the rest of the family on my dad's side didn't go or didn't finish. So I went an hour and a half away. It wasn't like I was flying somewhere. No, yeah. It was far enough that I could come home when I needed to. And it wasn't too much of a strain. I didn't have to buy plane tickets or, you know, we still didn't have money. And so I was, you know, got a lot of financial aid to go to school. And I worked all the time while I was at school to just have spending money while I was there. And so it was, you know, definitely a big relief to go to school. I studied environmental science. I was going to save the world.
Wow.
And yes, you know, join Greenpeace and save the whales. I remember having an obsession with turtles and whales. Yeah, that's what I was going to do. And I think I just channeled all energy into going and helping people and doing something.
Yeah, it almost feels like because you had this really chaotic childhood, you ran away and you became a fixer. Like, I'm going to fix all the problems.
Yeah.
Because I had a lot of problems at home. Do you think that was a little bit of that? Or am I overanalyzing you?
No, I think I have always felt like I want to do something. I mean, that's why I'm here today. Mm-hmm. When I found out about you all and thought, you know, I don't have a lot of time right now with two little kids. I've always volunteered. I've always, you know, I grocery shopped for elderly people. I tutored fifth graders. I've always tried to, when I didn't go save the whales, because I needed to make money to support myself. I have always felt like I wanted to help and do good things. And so now that I'm at a point in my life where I don't really try to hide this past anymore, I learned about you guys and thought, if I tell my story, then maybe it could help other people.
Oh, absolutely. I love that you just said that, because what more can be done when we tell our stories, when we don't keep these things to ourselves, when we don't pretend like it's shameful to go through hard things, and also that when we share hard things, maybe it will do something for someone else. It'll make them feel like they're not quite so alone.
Well, and I look at my life now and it's pretty awesome. And so, you know, not that I don't struggle, because I do. But I look at everything I have and think, this is so amazing. It's what my mom always wanted for us. And for other, especially, honestly, I think about the kids that you guys help, and for them to know that people go through stuff and that you come out on the other side and you can be awesome is why I thought I would want to share when you guys brought up the podcast idea. I thought, yeah, that would be great.
Can you talk a little bit more about how you felt like you got through this stuff? What was helpful for you? Because this isn't the kind of thing that people just get through on their own with no help. Yeah. What did it for you?
So, well, I have to say, my mom is an unbelievably loving, supportive person. And so she was always there for me, always. And then I think education was huge. So the fact that I got into a school that gave me essentially a full ride and a job to be able to pay for books, and that I had, you know, my mom really started going to church after everything had fallen apart otherwise for her. And that was really helpful for me too. I'm not an overly religious person now, but at the time, being in high school and having this group of people that just, you know, had a lot of faith and were supportive and rallied around each other, and, you know, we could go to just be kids. And then, I mean, the people that my mom worked with who, you know, knew what she, maybe not everything she had been going through, but that she struggled financially. So, I mean, they helped me by, you know, letting me work there, but also gave me a computer to go away to college. And so really, I think education and having support around, it's not abnormal for kids to go through stuff and for families to struggle. And I think, you know, I, as an adult, have suffered from depression at different periods of time, and from not saving the world. And that was a big thing. I haven't saved the world yet. And it's very depressing. No, but I mean, not to joke about it, I really have suffered from, you know, postpartum and watching what maybe my dad had gone through. We all heal a little bit from knowing that other people have been through stuff. And that it doesn't mean that you're not okay. You know, I didn't bring any of that stuff on. And honestly, my mom didn't either. People go through things, and to hide them and pretend everything's perfect, I don't really feel like we learn from that. And we put a lot of pressure on ourselves and our kids and others to, you know, keep all that stuff hidden, where now, what I've learned is when I share with people, almost always you see this relief from someone else who's like, oh my gosh, this happened to me. And I can't really talk to anybody about it. You can't fix what's hidden.
I love that.
For me, understanding everything that had happened before me, so that when I did, I swore I was never going to get married or have kids.
Yeah. Tell me about that. Cause I remember you saying that before, and I imagine that would be really hard.
I was lucky to have processed a lot of this and built some ability to trust, but then to have met my husband, who is, you know, was very trustworthy and wanted me to be who I was, independent and to work. And, you know, I think that the things that I swore would never happen were because I wanted to make sure that if something did happen, even if it wasn't the same kind of thing, but if, you know, if there was an accident or a health issue, that I was going to be able to support myself, that I was not going to depend on someone else. Because early on, my mom stayed home. She had always wanted to stay home and raise kids. Yeah, I met this great person who wanted me to be who I was.
That's beautiful. I love that. And you have kids. You did end up having the kid.
I did.
And you're happy.
Yes. I wouldn't say that every day I wake up and think, oh, this is so perfect. Yeah. I mean, life is hard. And so I did end up having kids because I was at a point where I felt like, okay, if anything did happen, I could support my kids. I had been in, you know, years in a relationship with somebody that I felt like I could trust. We try to raise our kids to help other people. What I feel now is, you asked earlier how I got through things. I did go to therapy. And I do think that that was helpful. But honestly, the most helpful thing that I found is I keep a gratitude journal, and I try to just be, because what I've learned is focusing on the past and trying to, I'm never going to fix what happened. I can't go back and erase what happened. I can't make it make sense. It will never make sense. I think it's more the norm, right? I don't know what the statistic is now, but over 50% of people are divorced. It's higher than 50%. It's more normal to have an abnormal family, you know, not the typical American dream family. And it's okay. You know, you look at what you have and you deal with that and think about, how do I make the best of the situation that I have?
Yeah. And I think you teach a lot about how to do that. Thank you so much.
I'm thankful that you had me. I think it's great that your organization exists, because I think while my mom had her church, I think there really wasn't something like this that we knew about or that could have helped us. Having someone like you guys that especially kids can turn to and know, you know, that they're valued, and that the world is hoping that they'll have a chance. Is, I think, awesome.
Thank you so much. I just feel like you really hit at the heart of why we are doing this podcast. So I think it's cool that we're ending with you too, because it wraps it up in a really beautiful way.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this season of Second Stories. If you've enjoyed our podcast, we would be so thankful if you rated us and left us a review. It has been our honor to share these stories, and we're thankful to each and every one of you for seeing the value in them as well, for listening and sharing and helping bring hope and healing to the light. We hope to continue sharing these stories through a second season sometime in the next year. That means we're looking for more second stories like these. If you or someone you know has a second story to share, please reach out to us at communications@second-story.org. That's communications@second-story.org. It's not our efforts that really fuel this podcast, it's your stories. And as long as we have stories to share, we'll keep going. And if you're inspired by these stories like we are and want to make a difference, we invite you to donate to Second Story. Here's the cool thing. Second Story makes this podcast in-house with our own communications team and some volunteer production support from our amazing intern, Franklin Vaughn. That means that your donation won't go to the nitty-gritty of producing this podcast. We already have that covered. Your support will go directly to helping more people like the ones you heard this season write their second stories. Second Story helps hundreds of young people every year write second stories like these, and your support lets us do that. Visit second-story.org/give to contribute. More than anything, thank you again for listening. Until next time.